Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Japan's space agency announced that by 2030 it wants to collect solar power in space and zap it down to Earth using laser beams or microwaves. If it all goes right, it will reduce Japan's dependence on oil by 50%. And if it all goes wrong, it will unleash Mothra. This year's Rockefeller Center Christmas tree is a 76-foot-tall Norway spruce from Easton, Connecticut. So come on down to Rockefeller Center and watch a tree slowly die.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Now here's the man who's greening your world one kilohertz at a time, Mike Novak.
And it's a Sunday morning.
Pull this microphone over.
It's a Sunday morning, and even at 8 a.m., we have a studio full of people. I don't even have a microphone for Heather, so, you know, she's just going to be quiet.
Oh, just pull the microphone over just for a second so you can say hello. Producer Heather Fry. Oh, I better turn on your mic, huh?
Good morning. Thought you just wanted to be me to be quiet, so it would be a nice change.
Well, then we won't get any more grief from Jake Hartford Show, right? Yeah. And besides, today I have the Chicago Gardener of the Year in studio. Gardeners, because it was a group effort, and not all of them, but we'll explain that in a second, because the Chicago Gardener of the Year is a school, I'll tell you all about it in just a little bit later. Today, by the way, today is America Recycles Day. And in the second hour of the show, the executive director of the Illinois Recycling Association, and the initials, of course, are IRA, Mike Mitchell is here. And we're thinking, okay, I was a busy guy yesterday. First of all, I went to Mayor Daley's 2009 Landscape Awards at Garfield Park Conservatory. And then I came home and had like 20 minutes to watch Michigan get pounded by Wisconsin. And then I had to go off to the inaugural Recycling Heroes Dinner on behalf of the Illinois Recycling Association, which was at Brookfield Zoo. So we wandered around Brookfield Zoo and heard speechifying, and they gave away some awards. And so it was a busy day for me. And I'm not sure what the point was. It's just that everybody who was involved in yesterday's activities are somehow here in the studio or on the phone today. And we will talk about America Recycles Day with Mike Mitchell, and I hope you're doing something to honor it, and recycle. I mean, or set up a recycling system, or take a woven bag to the grocery store so you don't get plastic bags to take home with you. Just throw it in your briefcase or in your pocket. You can get a little Chico bag. They fit in a purse. If you drive, you can throw them in the back of the car, and just do something in honor of America Recycles Day. And later on, when Mike Mitchell is here, we're going to have Stump the Mike and see if we can figure, you have people call in and they've got, oh, you've already got ideas, eh, Heather? Things that you need to recycle but don't know how. And we'll have some stories about that because, you know, the saga continues about recycling in Chicago with the blue cart. Is that going to happen? I talked to actually the commissioner of the Department of the Environment yesterday, Suzanne Malik McKenna. And then her assistant. See, Suzanne was at the Landscape Awards ceremony, and then her assistant was with me at the recycling thing, and so I pounded them both about recycling. Hey, when are we going to get blue cart? When's it going to happen? So there's not exactly answers yet, but that will happen. Welcome, one and all. All right, look at this. The whole family is in the studio, and that's the Modder Hacks. And did I pronounce that correctly,
you
Ellen?
You did.
I know. I've been working on it because I know nobody else gets it right, do they?
They don't, no.
You guys have the problem that I... Now, wait a second. Is that your maiden name or is that that guy's name?
That's my married name.
It's my fault.
Yeah, so it's Randy's fault, all right? I have the same problem with Novak. You'd think it's pretty easy, but... I insist on the W or the V pronunciation of the W. So, and the soften the A. So it's not Nowak. It's Novak. All right. But, Modder Hack is spelled M-O-D-E-R-H-A-C-K.
That's correct.
And you get Motor Hack. What else have you got? What's the weirdest one you ever got?
Motor Hack is pretty much
Motor Hack is pretty much the.
Usually just a confused look.
It's like a car. It's a Motor Hack. I like that idea. If you got a really bad car, it's
the
so.
The sound it makes.
Yeah, the sound. The Motor Hack.
That's not very complimentary to someone's name, however.
Cash for Motor Hacks. That's the new Obama thing.
Money for Motor Hacks.
Money for Motor Hacks. There we go. That's what we're going to do. But then it'll all end up going to your place. So Ellen and Randy are here, but oh, look across the studio. We have Daniel and Maddie. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Now, do you guys both go to Franklin, our Fine Arts Center in Chicago?
I don't anymore. Now I go to Whitney Young Academic Center.
Oh, my goodness.
I went there for about 3 years.
He's still at Franklin. He's a second grader.
Okay, you pull that just a little bit farther down. There we go. We'll get you guys in there. Now, your mom helped put this garden together at Franklin, and I said I would explain. The Gardener of the Year, they actually gave the award to the school, right?
Yes.
And there was a group of people who got together to do this garden, design it. You have a landscape firm,
yes.
A design firm.
I do.
But you also worked with teachers and parents and
open lands.
And open lands. Yeah, I was going to mention open lands, definitely.
Right.
And the kids.
Right.
Who did art. Did you do, Daniel, some art in there?
Do
you remember the kindergarten project?
Yeah, we did art.
It was a water sculpture. Last year, actually, Margaret Corman is our wonderful art teacher at the Franklin Fine Arts Center. And each year, one of the different arts programs is featured for the big show at the end of the year. And in May of 2008 was the art show. And Margaret Corman put together a program where every grade made a different type of artwork, and it was showcased in the garden. The event was actually called Art in the Garden, and it was... just an opportunity to unveil the finished garden to the school and the surrounding community, but also to use the garden as actually the exhibit room for the beautiful art that the students had created. And Daniel's class in kindergarten, they created a water sculpture made out of beads, and it was a copper stand with a string of wire, and each of the wires had beads on it, and it looked like a water spray. So one of the elements of that program was to relate all of the artwork back to earth, wind, fire, or water. Again, the whole theme of recycling the earth, being stewards of the earth, taking care of our garden and our community was part of the artwork as well.
And you can see it's America Recycles Day. It all comes
ties
back
together.
Around. And this was last year, though.
This was last year, yes.
Was the garden finished last year? Or?
You know, a garden is never finished.
Well, I know that.
So,
okay.
Yes, yes. But it was at a point where we, of course, we'd had it open at different times of the year, but it was at a point where we could truly say the two classrooms were complete, 90% of the plant material that we had wanted to put in there, and renovation of the garden was complete. So we'll be working on it on an ongoing basis. Of course, I have ideas of things I'd like to change.
Yeah, but you already got the award.
Well,
you can just let it go now. Just let it slide. And what happens when Daniel's no longer in the school?
You know what? That's actually a big concern of mine. I have a wonderful garden committee, and honestly, this could never have happened without the energy of Tom Shelley and Rosalia Shelley, Tom and Stephanie Irving, Lisa Valiani, a number of other people, Lena Hilko, who was actually our LSC president. None of this could have happened without them, because it's their energy. But I am always looking to recruit new people for the garden committee, because at some point somebody is going to need to step in and take over, because like your kids are growing up and getting ready to leave for college someday, I'm going to have to leave the garden someday and turn it over to somebody else. So somebody will step forward. I'm sure they will. It's a jewel that they'll want to maintain.
I've seen, if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, I've got the link to your website, which has the pictures of the garden up there. So if you want to see what this looks like, and it's sort of based around this huge gate that looks like Stargate SG-1. Isn't it?
Yes. Well, you know, it's when I came to the school 4 years ago, when Madeline was going into the fourth grade, there had been an attempt made to create a garden in the front, and one fabulous parent whose name I don't even know created that beautiful Chinese moon gate, and that was the one element that was there that remains. And everything else we reworked. But from that garden gate, I was inspired to create an Asian-inspired garden. And every element of it has something to do with the Far East. The Japanese gardens, Chinese garden elements have been incorporated into the garden. But it is a beautiful element and a really showcase as well.
That's Ellen Motterhack, and she represents the Franklin Fine Arts Center in Chicago. And the grades there are?
It's a K-8 elementary school. It's a magnet school in the city of Chicago. Our focus is the arts program. It is a wonderful community of teachers and parents and students. Amazingly, we started this program back in the fall of 2006. And
I got to interrupt you, because Heather's taking pictures of Daniel. You guys got this big trophy. It looks like the Stanley Cup trophy for being the garden of the. Is that staying at your house, or are you going to be sharing it with other people?
You know, Miss Friedman, our wonderful principal, was kind enough to allow us to keep it for the weekend, but we are taking it to school tomorrow morning. And certainly this week we have a report card pickup on Wednesday, and we will be showcasing it along with some pictures of the garden, so that the whole school community can see what the wonderful event was this past weekend with Mayor Daley.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. I started the top show. Those of you who just joined me, just woke up, we're talking about the Gardener of the Year and Mayor Daley's 2009 Landscape Award Ceremony, which was yesterday at Garfield Park Conservatory, and I was there. And I come in, and I figured I'm going to hang out in the back and drink my coffee and watch the whole thing. And they're escorting me up. And go, oh, we've got a front seat row seat here for you. I have a front row seat. And I thought, I didn't really want to be in the front row here, but well, it turns out, because I judged several of the gardens, they had me. And so what the best part of that, though, was the awards, the gifts they gave out.
Yes.
These table composters, your kitchen table composters with the charcoal filters, and we're always looking for ways to save the veggies, and usually I just throw them in a Tupperware, and then they start to stink, and you know, you can't open the Tupperware after a while, and then I throw it out in the compost pile. But these things are cool. Those are really lovely little gifts.
It's going to be a nice replacement for the composter we have on our countertop. So.
And the thing you should know, I mean, I have Ellen Motterhack here, who was the designer behind the Franklin Fine Arts Center Garden. But there were all kinds of people there. There are different regions. There are five different regions in Chicago that are represented. And they have community landscapes and schools and multi-unit residential and single-family and commercial landscapes and container gardens and green roofs and walls and high-rise residential and native landscapes, public institutions, specialized gardens, vegetable gardens, and then some odds and ends that they throw in. And the thing is, these are the real environmentalists in Chicago.
You know, this was not even a program that I was familiar with until it came out of the blue. My art teacher brought it to our attention this summer.
Really?
And yeah, I wasn't even familiar with it. And
because I have had the Gardener of the Year on my show, I want to say, for 7 or 8 years running now. And I've been
apparently
very...
I miss that one each year.
Yeah.
But
that's okay. I wasn't busting you on that, actually. No, I'm just saying it's always fun to bring in the Chicago. In fact, one year I had the Chicago Gardener of the Year, and somebody wrote me this nastiest letter and said, "You didn't ask the right questions. You didn't ask any questions at all."
Well, you know, it was a wonderful event yesterday, and to see all those people from throughout the city who are committed to maintaining their own space, their own green space, for not only their enjoyment but for the enjoyment of others around them in their community. It was really powerful. I was very pleased to be part of that, let alone win Gardener of the Year for the school. That was a real honor. But just to be there amongst others who are doing the same thing, we're all just taking our little corner of our neighborhood and doing our best to make it look beautiful and do something for the environment, but also aesthetically for the community. And so to see everybody who's doing that kind of thing as well was pretty cool.
It is. And there's just a great energy in the room. Yes. And it's one of the times, I even had my picture taken with Richie Daly yesterday. Yeah. Okay. And I got my issues because I talk about recycling all the time in the show, but it's the kind of thing where you just go, no, this is, everybody's having a good time today. Yeah. And we're all celebrating the fact that we're all working together to make the city better. And one of the best ways you can do that is with a garden.
Yes. And having it at the Garfield Park Conservatory, which is just a gem here in the city, was really nice as well.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell folks they're welcome to call and ask a question of the Gardener of the Year here at 773-838-9278. And as a matter of fact, if you want to ask Daniel or Maddie a question, do you think you can handle that, Maddie?
I will try to.
Now, I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't put you guys on the spot. But I do want to ask Daniel and Maddie, what's the best part about working in that garden for you? I did put him on the spot. There we are.
Yes, you did. I really like just, my favorite part so far was planting, and a couple years ago when we were planting in these big bushes, that was really fun because I was doing it with my whole class. And now, well, last year, we were in the garden just reading every day, so that was.
So you do, you use it, you go out, and does it make you feel good to go out into the garden and read?
Yes, it does. It makes
you know, it was a main part of when I sat down to design the garden. I told the PTA and the LLC that we couldn't design a garden that was just beautiful. It had to be functional, and it had to be used. And they had one deck area that couldn't quite seat an entire class, so we ended up expanding that area. But we created a second classroom. It's a circular classroom in the Japanese aesthetic with islands of stone in the middle with a dry pond around it to facilitate teachers going out and using the space. I wanted students to be in there on a regular basis. They use it for science and drawing and writing and reading and truly for inspiration as well as for research and just watching a garden grow. And one of the events that are programs that I worked on this year was with Daniel's second grade class. We were doing a science program about studying the characteristics of leaves and how do you, determine what a plant is based on what the characteristics of the leaves are. And so we had the kids out in the garden. They did a leaf scavenger hunt, and it was a lot of fun. But really, it had to be a garden that needed to be used. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be just a garden to look at. And
which means that there's a lot of space in the garden. I mean, I think people have an idea that a garden is all plants and it's packed full of plants, but if you want it to be used like at the school, you have to have a lot of space, so it probably seems to some people a little spare.
You know, well, the garden itself is 170 feet wide by 25 feet deep. It's on the north side of a three-story building, so we are shade-challenged.
Oh, dear. But I have that myself. Yeah.
But as you can see from some of the photos, we are, you know, there's a lot you can grow in the shade. It's much more of a foliage garden. But we do use both ends of the gardens as classrooms, and then we have some meandering paths through it. That gets you from one point to the other. But there's a lot you can do in a small amount of space. And it's not all plant material, but it's pretty heavily planted. We were very fortunate to get a donation from Early Bloom Nursery out of Michigan. And it is a...
How'd you do that?
Oh, well, you know,
you
we have
connection
our connections.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Case Corman. Yeah. Case Corman is Margaret Corman's father-in-law, and he grows ground covers. Mm-hmm. And so he donated a large supply of ground covers for us, which was very nice. But we've had a lot of assistance from other organizations, and we mentioned Open Lands. Without Open Lands, this never would have happened. Margaret Corman wrote the original grant. We received, I think, upwards of $20,000, not only for planting, but also for the artwork that adorns the building.
Ah.
And without it, we could not have done it. What was nice about Open Lands, well, not nice at the beginning, I had to get over this hurdle, was part of the requirement for donating the money to the garden was that the students were involved with the installation. And as somebody who works in landscape design and installation, when you have crews come in, everything's clean, succinct, done, and to bring in students, it's a whole different process.
Well, it's not just students, okay, because I've done this too. It's anybody you bring in. If they're not part of your regular crew, they don't know your methods, they don't know necessarily how to plant something.
Right.
Because that's what happens all the time when I do stuff and people say, oh, can I help? And you want to say, no, go away.
It's funny that you say that because like about 3 hours into the first day, it was a three-day process, and we literally used K through eighth grade students. Mm-hmm. We just brought them out on a rotating basis. At some point, I must have been standing in the garden with my mouth hanging open, my face white, and just stunned at the fact that the kids who were coming into the garden now were literally trampling all of the work that had just been done. And Jamie,
exactly.
Yes.
It's that kind of discovery.
This is awful. And Jamie Zaplatos from Open Lands came up, put her hands on my shoulders, and said, Ellen, let go of the control. Look how much fun these kids are having. They've never done this. A lot of them haven't. And so really, that's when you began to appreciate the joy that they were experiencing. And I learned to let go.
And the good news is that you put something in the ground, in 5 minutes it's been trampled to death, so you get to replant. You get to put more stuff in the ground.
Well, you know, a lot of those first couple of days were bringing in the compost and watching the kids shovel all the compost into the wheelbarrows. The parents wheeled it in, then they raked it out. And so the next group of kids would come in and just trample all over.
Well, I don't want to get anybody to yell at me after this one, so I'm going to ask you a couple of specific questions.
Okay.
Here, and that is, it's an Asian garden. Are you okay over there, Daniel? Yeah. Do you want to take a nap? Is that? No? You okay? You guys are going to breakfast after this, right?
Yes, yeah. We are.
Okay. Did you find a breakfast place yet?
Not yet.
No.
We're still scoping.
Heather, you got anything?
I can look for... I think there's an IHOP around.
Is there an IHOP nearby? I don't know what their kind of place is, and I don't think Paco's Tacos is open yet.
So.
All right. No breakfast burritos. Ellen Moderhack, who's with the Franklin Fine Arts Center in Chicago, helped create the Garden of the Year. It's kind of weird because you're the face of the Gardener of the Year, so you are essentially the Gardener of the Year. What are you going to do? All right, so this is an Asian garden.
Right.
What was the plant material like that you were using? You wanted to have lots of open space. You wanted to have, you had northern exposure, so you were sun challenged. So what kind of plants did you go for?
You know, we were actually, from the original garden, we have replanted all of the yews, or most of them. Some of them weren't
working.
Well,
so you can't kill a yew.
No,
that's
you can't.
That's the one thing about
Although
yews.
Although you can try, but...
Yeah. You can't even trample it. You could get the kids.
No.
They wouldn't be able to kill you.
Well, the main thing with any landscape design is finding those plants that serve as architectural elements, you know, that weight the garden in particular locations, evergreens to anchor the corners, trees and shrubs that can handle the part shade. We are fortunate enough at the height of the summer when the sun is over directly overhead, we get a couple of weeks of full sun.
Yeah.
So there are some things towards the northern side of the garden that actually can, you know, that are more sun-oriented, but, you know, can tolerate shade. We have the serviceberry amelanchier in the garden, viburnums.
The great thing about the serviceberry is that the kids get to see it bloom.
Absolutely.
In the spring, and I have a serviceberry in my yard, and we say in the spring it dances. Because in the wind with the flowers
the
on
white flowers.
It dances.
It's beautiful.
It's just an amazing plant.
And I always strive to include plants that do things in multiple seasons.
Right.
So we don't have the space to have plants that are only green in the summer. Really, it needs to do something in the spring, summer, and fall. So the viburnums and the powerful scent of the Judd viburnum or the Carlisii.
And the viburnums will take some shade.
They'll take some shade. And even the ones that are up against the building are doing really, really well. So it must get enough sun at the height of the
sure.
season to facilitate that. But we do a lot. We used hydrangeas. The limelight hydrangea is absolutely gorgeous in our garden. We have an oak leaf hydrangea. And we have incorporated some of the macrophyllas, but they're not doing as good. So, but that's
I'm not
part
surprised,
of the,
actually, yeah.
Part of the acidic soil. But we have done a thorough underplanting of hostas and ferns and astilbe and lots of ground cover. The one thing I will tell you is the first year after we planted, we were inundated with rabbits, as every Chicago gardener, the bane of their existence. So we did invest in a rabbit-proof fencing, which is sunk about a foot and a half into the ground and rises about 2.5 feet.
Has it worked?
Yes, it has.
So there you go for all you folks. That's sometimes the best way to do it. Is
we just had to. I mean,
yeah.
When Margaret Corman was actually out there in the middle of the winter taking photographs with her art students, and she called me and she said, "You have to stay after school and look at the garden. You are not going to believe what I saw." It was literally covered in rabbit scat, and every plant was eaten down to the ground. It was like watching your house burn down. I was sick. And so we rallied our forces and we brought in a company to help us install this fence, and it has absolutely done the trick. And the garden has completely thrived, and everything came back.
And you became the gardener of the year, or
the
garden of the year. And well, I'll tell you what we do before you guys go. Maddie and Daniel, bring that trophy around here, okay?
Yeah.
And while you're doing that, Ellen, pass the microphone over to Randy, who has not said a word.
Dad.
What was your participation in all this, Dad?
I did whatever Ellen asked me to do.
But you know, that usually involves schlepping bags of mulch compost, you know.
Cutting down trees.
Yeah, I was labor. I helped a little bit with just certain elements. I'm an industrial designer by training, but for the most part, I was labor and just helping out. But I was certainly not the most consistent labor. Tom Shelley, as Ellen mentioned, was one guy I'd like to single out because he was there every single time we needed things to be done. And I can't remember the other guy from the neighborhood, Joe.
Oh, John Newhouse,
John,
as
sorry.
Well, is a huge, huge part of the garden. Tom Irving. These are guys, and Jeff Kuntz. Those would be my four guys who come anytime that I need them, when I need to transplant, bring in a heavy material, or anything. And they are really, really helpful. Without them, it could not have happened.
Can I get you around here, Ellen?
Sure.
Randy, you're on mic here. So
okay.
you're running the radio show while we get a photo here. See, I don't have recorded stuff that I can say. We'll be right back.
No, this is live radio, folks.
That's right. That's all right. Let's hold up the Stanley Cup here.
And they're doing a great job.
What a pose! Have we got it there, Heather?
Yeah, one more
for good luck. This is really good radio.
Oh,
folks.
It is. Yeah. Nothing like dead air to really
help.
All right.
It's all theater of the mind.
That's it. Well,
imagine
listen,
if you will.
A whole Modern Hack family, thank you all for coming in, Ellen and Randy and Daniel and Maddie, and congratulations. And again, it bears repeating that a lot of people have some really, really wonderful gardens in the city of Chicago, and to see so many people in the same room and all celebrating that is really remarkable. And it's a good time. I encourage people who like to garden to get involved if you can, you know. I have never entered the contest. I have to admit that I don't know. I don't want people in my yard. But
you know, it is funny. You put yourself out there, but the reward of doing so is amazing. It just to bring attention to an installation like this, where it was truly a tsunami of people coming together to make it work, and to be able to share it with everybody is. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you.
You're going to have to see yourself out. Paco's Tacos is down the road. You're looking for breakfast, and Heather will help you with that. Daniel, Maddie, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In just a sec, we'll get Rick DeMaio on the phone, too. But you can, let's get Rick. Then you can show these good people out and point them in the direction of breakfast. Since 1997, WRD Environmental has been creating healthy, sustainable landscapes that are both beautiful and responsible to future generations. You could say WRD is in the business of transformation. Sometimes it's through projects like the Lincoln Park South Pond, for which WRD is part of a team that is turning the zoo's popular pond into a model for sustainable landscape solutions, habitat restoration, and environmental learning. Other times, it's through leadership in organizations like the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, which actually I know Ellen Moderhack is associated with, which is working to green up the landscape industry so that sustainable design materials and methods are the professional standard. Sometimes the transformations are people themselves. WRD is a partner with the Chicago Department of Environment in managing Green Core Chicago, which provides job training in the green industry, electronics recycling, and home weatherizations. And I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that WRD was the underwriter for Mayor Daley's 2009 Landscape Awards. So they are all over the place, including on this radio show. And I'm proud to say that for innovative, sustainable transformations, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. And now we go to line 27 and bring in Rick DeMaio. Are you there, Rick?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike. How are you?
You're almost there. I got to play something for you, okay? That happened at your station the other night, which I'm sure you...
Oh, my God, I watched that. Go ahead. I know you're going to play. Go ahead.
Good evening, Chicago. I'm Bill Curtis.
And I'm Walter Jacobson. Our friend Rob Johnson has the night off.
We are thrilled to be together again here on Channel 2. No need to change the dial. Just turn your clocks back 20 years and hang on. Ready to go?
We are ready to go.
That was really fascinating, wasn't it?
That was pretty cool stuff, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was watching that, and I was thinking to myself, how cool was it to see Bill and Walter? And you know what? It's amazing, because when I was doing the morning show with Bob Surratt on Fox Thing in the Morning with Bob and Marianne, it was back in, I believe, 99 or maybe 98, where Bob would have, once in a while, have Bill and Walter in. They would do a little bit of a reunion thing, like right before, a huge political election. Maybe it was a midterm or the presidential election. And they had Bill and Walter, Bob basically had them do like a mock newscast, and Bill Curtis threw it to me to do the weather, and I'll never forget this. I'm standing up there in front of the chroma key, nervous as anything, and Bill looks at me and goes, "Rick, how does the weather look in the Galapagos Islands?" And we had it set up where my satellite kind of like rotated over to the, you know, inside which side is the Galapagos Island on, Mike? Is it the east or west side of the continent of South America?
That's the west side.
The west side, yeah. So I was able to go all the way. I wanted to make sure your listeners know this as well. That's why I said that.
You know, and now that I've said that, I've got to go check for sure. But I'm pretty sure it's the west side.
At the same time, confirming what I needed to say, which was I was putting the satellite from Hawaii over to the west side of South America. And it was so cool because I finished up the weather and came back to the desk, and there was Bill and Walter. And I had already been doing the weather with Walter every night, so it was no big deal. But it was pretty daunting. I don't think people realize that when Bill and Walter would anchor the news, they would literally have a rating mic of about 25% of the TV sets turned on at that time were watching Channel 2. Nowadays, the rating system, you're lucky if you get about a 6 or 7%.
Well, also, there are so many more cable outlets, too. It's just, it's not the same deal that it was when they were doing it. But still... Yeah, I understand completely. It's the thing that I was struck by when they were on the other night is I thought, and this is not going to, the other people who are already anchoring are not going to be happy about this. I'm thinking, bring them back. You know, let's put the adults in charge of the news again, okay?
You know, that's a good point. You know, there was something about watching them made me think, because I grew up in New York watching Bill Buttel and Roger Grimsby. And when you watched that, you said, okay, there's two old guys doing the news. That's not saying that older women can't do the news, but there was just something about when I was watching, I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm watching something that I could relate to and trust and understand, as opposed to going, who's this and what are they talking about? Which it seems like that's what local news is.
Well, and it's not just guys. I mean, because I'd be real happy to have Carol Marine doing, you know, back on the air, too, and doing her thing. I mean, I know she still does. But, you know, being an anchor and being, you know, in charge of that, it's, so, I don't know, you know. But
I think, you know, I'm not trying to say that, you know, old men are the only way I'm going to watch news. But there was just something about seeing the two of them up there. I was like, this is really cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
I watched all the way to the end, but did you see Walter's perspective?
Yeah, I liked the perspective, too.
It was fantastic. It was like... It was like someone sharpened his teeth and wound him up, and he went, like that. It was actually, it was really, really good stuff.
It was so, about 10 years of frustration that he got out. And then did you see, and I saw then yesterday, last night, I'm watching CBS 2, and a reporter asked Mayor Daley about Walter's comment.
Oh, really?
And you know what his response was? His response was, well, I'm still here. He's been gone for 20 years. I thought, whoa.
Well, Walter doesn't buy his airtime. Some people buy their candidacy. Walter doesn't buy his airtime.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I disappear next week, Mike, you'll know why.
Because
Mayor Daley's people are after me.
Yeah, well, if they haven't taken me down yet, you know, you're going to be okay. By the way, the Galapagos due west of Ecuador, so...
Right, west of Ecuador.
600 miles off the coast, roughly.
Right.
How do you know this?
Big Green Rabbit.
Big Green Rabbit?
Has a whole episode about the Galapagos Islands. And I watch it with my son.
See, we're watching the wrong programs here. We're watching Bill and Skippy, and she's watching Big Green Rabbit. So
my son dominates a TV, sadly. I only get it after he goes to bed. And usually then I'm too tired to care to watch TV. I'd rather read a book.
So I see that in the email you sent me, Rick, you're already talking, well, not already. I mean, here we are. We're in the middle of November. So we got to talk about winter weather preparedness week.
Hey, a little bit of reality check there, huh?
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to face reality with the temperatures we've had the last week.
Yeah, Mike, it's amazing. The first 15 days in the month of October, we were running about 10 degrees below normal. And the first 15 days of the month of November, we've completely reversed the trend. We're running about 6 degrees above normal. We had a high of 63 yesterday. Last weekend we talked about we had 2 days in a row of 70. And it's amazing how every month over the last 6 months has been anything but what that month's supposed to be like. You know, June was like May, July was like June, August was like half of July, October was like, you know, November, and now November is acting a lot like October.
This is so funny. I like that analogy that we've got a year that was impersonating a different year.
Yeah, it pretty much was like that. Now the trend definitely, it ends probably tomorrow because there's a nice little cutoff low that's beginning to develop across the central Midwest that most likely will probably give us some fairly cloudy, brisk, and cool weather between now and probably Thursday. But still, once that drifts east, we go right back into, believe it or not, a mild pattern by Saturday and Sunday of next week.
So if I don't get my bulbs in today, which I was planning to do, they will be in, I can do it next weekend.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Because even the weather that we have between now and next Friday, while it's not even going to get cold, the ground is certainly not going to get frozen either. There's like basically no temperatures below 32 degrees between now and probably next week, which is pretty darn good for this time of year. But you brought up Winter Weather Week, or I should say Winter Weather Preparedness Week. This is something that the National Weather Service offices locally do different times of the year depending on the location. So for Illinois, Illinois and Indiana are doing it from beginning tomorrow all the way through this coming Saturday. And the reason why they do it, Mike, is because next week, obviously, is the week before Thanksgiving, and you kind of want to make sure that people know what is happening, especially if they're driving or flying to different parts of the country, and they may hear of certain watches or warnings or advisories, and they go, okay, well, what does that mean? So that's probably one of the reasons why they do it.
Mm-hmm. At this point, has anything changed in your prognostication for the winter in terms of temperature or snow or precipitation in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned that because, like I said, with the pattern being somewhat different between month to month, it does look like that we probably will not get into anything sort of winter-like until maybe somewhere around maybe 2 or 3 days after Thanksgiving. A lot of the long-range models are suggesting that this big trough of cold air over the eastern Pacific Ocean will eventually migrate westward. They've already shown some signs of some storm systems developing in the Rocky Mountains probably by day 6 or 7, which would be probably next Thursday or Friday. But again, it looks like we're going to be on the mild side of things. I would still say for the next week to 10 days, anywhere between near and above normal conditions temperature-wise,
mm-hmm.
which would put us probably in the mid-50s because normal high right now is about 48. And when you think about 63, what we had yesterday, I mean, when you have 48 degrees normally and you have 63 ago, that's pretty good. Because 63 degrees sunshine, you can basically go out in the light jacket and enjoy the weather. And while we're not going to have that over the next 3 or 4 days, we can easily be back in there by Friday and Saturday of next week, and that again is bonus territory. So again, I'm still thinking probably 40 to 45 inches of snow, but again, a lot of that snowfall I think this winter is going to be more of a probably wet snow event. I don't think we're going to have these clipper systems coming down from Canada that we had so often last year. And a lot of people forget that last year we had a fairly mild start to November. Then we got into the middle of the month, and it got cold. And by the end of the month, we had snow. And December last year, Rockford set a record for snowfall. It had almost 35 inches of snow. So it was, once we got past right around that Thanksgiving period, it was winter. And winter didn't go away for about 4 months. It was pretty brutal at that
point. It was a very difficult winter and cold.
It was long. It was very long as well.
Well, it lasted into July, actually.
Yeah, for some people it never ended, right.
That's Rick DeMaio, by the way. If you're just tuning in, if you've never heard the Mike Novak Show before, Rick is a meteorologist, works over at CBS2 Chicago, and every Sunday at 8:30 we take a look at the weather, and Rick gives us a forecast for the week, whether you're a gardener or just going outside and doing something, whether you're an environmentalist. One of the things that we have not had much of in the past couple of weeks, and I'm sure you've noticed it, Rick, is rain.
Oh, yeah, it's been pretty dry. It's we reversed the trend from a wet October where we had 19 days of rain and 7 inches of precipitation to, let's see, we had a little bit of sprinkle activity last night. So if we get into the weather books, we've now been through, 14 or 15 days now, Mike?
No, yeah.
14 days. We have a grand total of 1/10 of an inch of precip. The first 2 weeks of the month. That's incredible when you think about it.
Well, yeah, it is interesting. And that's been kind of the pattern this year. We'll get lots of rain, lots of rain, lots of rain, and then suddenly we go 2, 3, 4 weeks without rain.
Oh, yeah, September we had 21 consecutive days without rain, and all of a sudden everybody's like, hey, we're in somewhat of a drought, and that's one of the reasons why we had, I think, such, you know, really nice fall foliage, and now all of a sudden we're getting right back into a dry pattern. So, and I don't think that's going to last. I think, without a doubt, we'll get back into some light rain tomorrow. Not a lot of rain, but between Monday night and probably Wednesday, out of those 48 hours, I wouldn't be surprised if we have rain on about 40 of those 48 hours. Looks like a very kind of cloudy, windy, somewhat sprinkly, drizzly kind of light rain pattern between now and late Wednesday.
All right, so all in all, temperatures dip a little bit in the next couple of days, might rise up again next week, and we'll get a little bit of rain with it.
Yeah, probably by Friday and Saturday next week we'll get back into an above-normal pattern. Right?
Well, thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
As
always, you can go to Rick's website, demioweather.com. You can find that by linking to the homepage of my website, mikenovak.net, and just click on to DeMio Weather, and we will keep you posted. And as we get towards all right. Well, the last thing, should we do a contest, Heather? Remember we did the contest earlier in the year. I forget even what we were asking, but what we should do is first measurable snowfall in, this year, this season. Should I give you a week to think about that, Rick?
The last contest was when it hit 90 degrees.
That was it.
It was a 90 degree day when we hit 90.
Right, and what we'll do, Mike, we'll do a first inch of snow or first day of snow. We can also do the first day of below zero weather as well. How about that?
All right, you prepare for next week because we know we're not going to get it this week, and then we'll do a contest next week and give some people some prizes when they can guess when that's going to happen.
Like a box of Rice Krispies or...
Are you going to do your Rice Krispies analogy
again? Holidays, gift certificates, and whatever.
Sure, we'll find something to give away. I got books. It's still piling up in my garage.
Good ones, too.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Rick, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good, Mike. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, have you made your holiday to-do list yet? Thanksgiving's a week from Thursday. Wow. Which means the frenzied days of gift shopping and holiday parties are not far behind. Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center can help you get through these hectic times with great gifts plus home and party decor. You've doubtless been disappointed by discount store or grocery store poinsettias, and I was just talking to Scott Henderson over at Sid's about poinsettias, you know, and giving away their gift certificates. That's the perfect thing to do.
That is, and they're beautiful.
You grab one of their gift certificates that we give away on this show and run down to Sid's, get a poinsettia. So we're getting more of those gift certificates in. So this year, even if you don't have a gift certificate from Sid's that you won on my show, send a real florist quality poinsettia from Sid's. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area and even around the week. During their Christmas open house, you'll save 25 to 60% off their entire stock of Christmas decor to make this holiday season extra special. Sid's has thousands of traditional Christmas ornaments and trims displayed on dozens of themed trees, plus the area's largest selection of lifelike artificial trees in over 100 styles. You'll also save on... there's a question we're going to ask Mike Mitchell coming in.
About Christmas trees?
Artificial trees and recycling. Because Mike Mitchell is on after 9 o'clock. Where was I? You'll save on nativity sets, tablecloths, lifelike wreaths, garlands, arrangements, and so much more. In addition, special free demonstrations are scheduled throughout the day at both of their stores. Visit SIDSonline.com for all the details and to download the coupons for a free holiday-themed canvas tote and $10 off your purchase.
Ooh.
SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. And I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is officially on the newsstands. And here are just some of the goodies you'll find inside. Tis the season for indoor plants, and there's a story on the best trailing plants for your home. Of course, even outdoor plants can look good with a covering of snow, and plantsman extraordinaire Roy Diblick tells you which ones you should add in the spring so they'll look good next winter. And there's a tear-out 2010 Gardener's Calendar featuring photos by Chicagoland Gardening's Ron Capick. Great guy. Takes great photographs. So you might want to take that calendar and put it on your wall. And the calendar also has tips about what to do in the garden for each month of the year. Of course, there are regular features in the magazine like what to do in the garden, your gardening questions, and regional reports. And now you can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine all over Chicagoland. In fact, more than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. And get your voice warmed up. My annual holiday hort sing-along in the back of the magazine on the inside page features your favorite carols with gardening lyrics, which I'm sure you will amaze your friends with.
We're going to do that. We're going to have our own Mike Novak sing-along on the air, aren't we?
I'm going to tell you about that in just a second.
Okay.
First, I'm going to tell you to pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine today, or better yet, subscribe. Find it on the web at www.chicagolandgardening.com or give the office a call during business hours, 866-806-1498. Tell them that Mike sent you.
Anything's hard to change, but hey, I got you down on your knees again. You watch the sky, it's a pale parade of passing clouds that cover the bed upon which we...
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Now, you were mentioning the caroling and that sort of thing, and doing a sing-along. Well, next week, the 22nd, the Frozen Robins are coming into the show.
Yay.
That is my caroling group, and we're going to pack them in here. I don't even know how we're going to get everybody in this. We do Christmas caroling all over the Chicago area. It's just one of my 700 jobs that have nothing to do with horticulture. People go, what? What are you?
Just another aspect of your personality.
You sing?
You're as lush as a garden, Mike. Just
Yeah. And sometimes I my tips turn brown too. So, but the Frozen Robins are going to be here in the studio, and we'll do some of those songs, some of my caroling songs. And I'm just second hour, the 9 o'clock hour. I think I'm just going to let them sort of take over the show. It's probably going to have very little to do with horticulture next week, and it's sort of, I don't know, sort of a kickoff to the holiday season.
I make a good apple cider. I'll bring my brew pot, and I'll brew homemade apple cider, and
we'll make it
that way they won't be so frosted.
And then
frozen, I'd rather. Warm them up with cider.
And we'll have Mike Sanders here.
Uh-huh.
We'll give him some of that. And Ron Cowgill and Joe Builder.
It'll be a
Trixie self-help and
Sunday.
It's a week early before the kickoff of the holiday season, but I figured let's do it before Thanksgiving rather than after.
I'm usually very anti-holiday music post-Thanksgiving because I feel sad for Thanksgiving. They act like it doesn't count anymore because they start, like, the number one FM station that does the holiday music has already gone to their holiday program.
Well, I've been watching commercials for 2 weeks now on
TV. I know,
TV.
but don't you think it should happen? Like, I don't care if you're cutting the pumpkin pie post the Thanksgiving dinner. It's like Christmas comes after Thanksgiving. It should start after Thanksgiving, in my
Well,
opinion.
Thanksgiving gets no respect, as
no,
we know.
No, it doesn't.
It gets,
and it's
none.
It's by far one of my most favorite American holidays because you get to sit and just eat.
Well, I see that Amtrak Tim is on the line.
And he's been waiting patiently.
I know. I got to take care of some biz. Hold on, Amtrak Tim. I do want to get your comment. It's always great to hear from you. But I got to give you a tip from the care of trees first, and it relates to what we were talking to Rick DeMaio about. When you thought this was the wettest year since Noah pulled up anchor, you know, now it's changed. It's been dry since the beginning of the month. Don't assume that your tree has enough water to get through the winter yet. At this time of year, annuals give up and perennials begin to go dormant, but the root systems of trees and shrubs are still active, storing water for the long winter, which means that you need to pay attention to ground moisture, especially if you have a tree that was planted in the past 3 years, especially if you have one that was planted this year. Evergreens in particular are vulnerable to desiccating winter winds. You should water all newly planted trees until the ground freezes. By the way, the best way to water a new tree is with a drip hose. Let it trickle at the base of the tree for at least a half hour. And sometimes you can do more. Sometimes you can do it in quadrants if you want to cover all the area around the tree and get the root ball completely soaked. And to keep that water in the soil, make sure your trees are well mulched. The care of trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. And the care of trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care, putting you and your trees first. Give them a call. 847-394-4220 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. Let's go quickly to Amtrak Tim on line 14. How you doing, Amtrak Tim?
I'm doing great, Mike.
You said you're committing an Amtrak sin. What do you mean?
Yeah. I have tripped this week to Wilmington, Delaware. I've got some work at a sewage plant there for DuPont.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was checking out the brand new upgraded Amtrak website.
Yeah.
For all your listeners. And the family bedroom was cheaper than a roomette.
So you went for the big bedroom?
Yes, I did.
Well, you think it's cheating not to sleep in the seat? You know, it is still the train, and you're still taking the Amtrak and supporting rail travel in America. So.
But just to let your listeners know, if I had been a family of four, and I had family bedroomed it back and forth,
mm-hmm.
Basically to D.C. and back to Chicago, $640 for a family of four, both ways, and that includes your meals.
Well, you know what? We'll talk about this again sometime. I'm hard up against the news. I wanted to say hi. All right, thanks for calling Amtrak, Tim. Second hour of the Mike Novak Show. We'll talk recycling.
You're listening to WCPT's Self-Help Sundays. 4 hours of home improvement help for inside and outside your home.
820 WCPT AM Willow Spring, 92.7 WCPT FM Arlington Heights, 92.5 FM WCPY DeKalb, and 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest.
Self-Help Sundays on WCPT AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Hey, welcome back. It's hour two of the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business is people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Here he is, once again, Mike Novak.
Take this wine and drink with me. Let's delay our misery. Say tonight, fight the break of dawn, come tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be gone, say tonight. Fight the break of dawn.
See, really what the truth is, come tomorrow, I'm going to have to get up really early to do radio. Not tomorrow. I'm actually speaking in the past tense because last night I was at the inaugural Recycling Heroes Dinner, which was given by the Illinois Recycling Association. And the guy who put that all together is right here in the studio with me, Mike Mitchell, the executive director. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, real good. Real good. Thank you.
Good dinner last night. I thought the event went very, very well.
Yes, it was a lot of work leading up to it, but it went off just great. It went off just great. You know, I think the program was awesome. The speakers were really good. Good turnout, and I think the people left the room with a lot of enthusiasm for the importance of recycling.
Oh, and by the way, happy America Recycles Day.
Yes, that was the reason we chose this date, the Recycling America Recycles Day Recycling Heroes Award. We expect to do it next year around the same weekend in honor of America Recycles Day, which is November 15th.
And just happens to be on a Sunday today.
This year. And many organizations and recycling groups and local event organizers use the season of America Recycles Day, not just the day. You know, a lot of times we say America Recycles Day culminates on November 15th. Mm-hmm. So many local organizers will do recycling drives and events October, early November, and use the theme of America Recycles Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's not on November 15th, you know, that kind of thing. So,
all right, so it's just sort of a focal point, and you can do stuff before or after or on the day, but, you know, what matters is getting people on board with recycling in America. And the, I think more and more people are on board, and we'll talk more about that, but really I've got to go to line one and bring in one of the recipients of your awards last night. You gave away three Recycling Heroes Awards, and one of them was to Kay McKean from Scarce.
Hi.
Hi, Kay. How are you?
Good to talk to you again.
So we're all alive here. We all survived, you know, big party, and we're all back to work today. I made Mike come into the studio, so he got dragged in here. You at least, well, you're sitting in a parking lot on a cell phone, right?
I am. Busy morning. It's a busy morning on America Recycle Day.
It is. It is a busy morning. And Kay was on the show not too long ago. I just, you know, I can't believe you guys have been around for 20 years, and I found out about you about 3 months ago. Tell me about Scarce again. It's the school and community assistance for recycling and composting education. What does that mean?
Well, we are all about sustainability and helping everybody get on board. Education is really the key. So our two main missions really are pollution prevention and resource conservation. And in that, of course, comes composting and recycling and rescue of all kinds of things from crayons to pianos. Mm-hmm. 20 years. We just started our 20th year.
That's amazing. And among the things you recycle out there are books.
Yes, sir. We have rescued over 3.5 million books in 19 years. Textbooks, storybooks, novels, and reference books.
I got a few in my house that are going to end up out there, I can tell you that.
I would love for you to come for a tour because we're really quite a unique place. And teachers from all over really the world, but mostly from the Chicagoland area, come and get free books for their students, for their classrooms, for maybe kids who they know at home don't have enough books for reading. So teachers come and choose whatever they want, and all the books are free for teachers.
Well, congratulations, Kay, on your Recycling Heroes Award from the Illinois Recycling Association.
That was very, very nice. Ira, Mike, everybody did such a great job in putting that event together and getting it organized. And it was kind of fun because the composting legislation that we worked on for such a long time, now it's passed. And now maybe the hard work really begins in getting it implemented, and it was a great kickoff for that last night.
Yeah, and that's why I've got you on, and I know you need to split in just a few minutes. So you and Scarce and the Illinois Recycling Association are working on a seminar that is going to happen this Thursday, and it's about the recent passage of SB 99, the Food Scrap Composting Bill. So tell me about the program this Thursday.
Well, this Thursday, Mike and I have been working on getting speakers from organizations and communities that have had successful recycling, food scrap recycling programs, as well as, I think, the such an important part, getting the state officials who can explain the permitting process to the haulers, to the composters, to the city officials who are going to be including this in upcoming contracts with their haulers to get all that food scrap collected correctly, get it composted correctly, keep it out of the landfills, and rescue all the water.
Well, what kind of learning curve are we talking about here? And, Mike, you're welcome to jump in any point, too. I mean, this is Illinois has been a little bit behind other states in that other states have had food composting laws, and we just finally got on board with that. So what does that mean in terms of getting up to speed in Illinois?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest things is that people do not understand how much water is in our food and how much water it takes to run a garbage disposal, and we really need to be paying attention to how much water we're taking out of Lake Michigan, and food scrap composting can really help us rescue that water, and I think that's exciting. But people think that protein can't be composted, and maybe in a home compost that's pretty tricky, but the learning curve that protein is needed back in our soil, and the amino acids and all the moistures from chicken skin and fish skin, it's all needed back. And so really the learning curve of Earth, that Earth needs to be, the soil needs to be replenished, and then we need those nutrients back, it's going to be a big job.
Well, okay, that's the, I'm going to say a little bit, that's a little bit of the touchy-feely part of this.
Yes, sir.
Let's get to the practical aspect. Who are we talking about coming to these, to this seminar and learning about this? It's not your average person, is it? It's policymakers and companies and people who are interested in getting real food scrap composting businesses together.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why county officials are coming, health departments are sending someone to learn how restaurants are going to be putting their food scraps into a different bin, how it's going to get collected, where it's going to go, what are the rules about the liquids from the food scrap composting, you know, the leachate. These are the people who need to know the details and to know the policies and the rules to make it work.
Mike, you were going to jump in with something.
Well, yeah, the municipalities, universities, county officials who, you know, who are part of the organizing the curbside collection or regular recycling, and we look into the future of seeing that would be just like you have your yard waste picked up once a week, certain times a year, that the food waste, food scraps, compost could be part of that too.
Well, my question would be to both of you, at some point, it's got to work its way down to the average citizen. Where does the average citizen play a part in this?
Well, like Mike just said, sometime at the curb where you used to put out your leaves and your grass, if you don't compost at home, which I wish everybody would keep those nutrients at home, but sometime at the curb, that's where your chicken bones will go and your turkey bones for Thanksgiving, and we'll capture that calcium. And people, it's going to be a big step. It's going to be a third bin, which we already have a third bin.
What I was going to say is, but folks can't expect to have this third bin, compost bin, out, you know, next week or next month. This is going to be a long process, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It's going to, first, I think the hauling companies and the compost companies are going to focus on the sources of a lot of food, like grocery stores and restaurants and hospitals and hotels, where there's large volumes,
mm-hmm.
and where they can train the staff about exactly what goes into those compost bins. Shedd Aquariums had a spectacular program for many, many years. Their staff has been taught, their docents have been taught, and they've been sending all their food scraps to Indiana because Illinois didn't have the law. And so now those kinds of steps have to be taken. Once the haulers and the composters are in place, the infrastructure's in place, then we need to go to these large sources of food volume and educate those folks and get the right things collected.
That's a really good point you make, that up until now, a lot of institutions in Illinois have been taking the food scraps and sending them elsewhere.
Yes, sir.
And now we keep it in the state. We use the nutrients. We recycle them. We keep the financial benefits of that in the state of Illinois.
And the jobs in Illinois, yes.
Uh-huh. But it sounds, though, and I hate to keep bringing it back to this. Well, I don't, because it's my job. I'm a radio guy, and the people listening, sure, there are policymakers listening to the show, but the average person wants to know how it affects them. And here's another monkey wrench in it. From what I understand, and I learned this at the dinner last night from talking to a person from the Department of the Environment in Chicago, Chicago has home rule. So that SB 99 doesn't really affect Chicago, although she told me that the goal of Chicago is to be compliant with SB 99 so that they will be on parallel tracks and be able to do the same things, but it's not necessary. You know, and it's amazing that a huge entity like the city of Chicago has a different way to go.
Well, I think one of the reasons that this bill, SB 99, passed is because of the city of Chicago. As I understand it, the versions of this bill have failed in the past, got bogged down in committee like many bills do on various topics. One of the reasons that there was an impetus for this bill and many state legislators were convinced to vote on it was the city of Chicago wanted it to happen too. You know, so whether they implement it in a parallel path or they're, or what, they are actually leading, in a sense, the content of this seminar in the way that they've issued a pilot project, an RFP for pilot projects, and they're going to be presenting the vision of that pilot project as well as the some of the bidders on that project, you know, the haulers, mm-hmm. are going to be talking about the programs they're planning to implement. So actually Chicago is helping drive this program.
Right.
Well, that's
they
good.
They have such a great need to do that. You know, Mayor Daley's trying to get all the schools with lots more recycling.
Yeah.
This is a great way to capture those nutrients, bring science to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then help our farmers have healthier soil, and then improve our water quality. So the goal, really, Chicago has been a leader, and it is, Mike's right, it's one of the reasons it passed. We had help from the Environmental Law and Policy Center. We had great help from State Senator Heather Steens and her Chief of Staff, Jen Walling, and it would not have happened without Chicago helping.
Well, on that note, I'm going to let you go because I know you're otherwise engaged in a few minutes.
Yes,
so, Kay McKean, congratulations on your award.
Well, thank you, and it was a lot of fun to see you again last night, Mike.
It was great seeing you, too, and I want to remind people that the seminar is this Thursday. And it's at the Crown Plaza in Lombard. That's at Roosevelt and Finley Roads. It's only $45, and it's basically all day, isn't it?
Yeah, 8:30 to 3:30, right, Mike?
Yes, yep, yeah. And you can register on you go to IllinoisRecycles.org to register.
And is it in Glen Ellen?
It's the Glen Ellen Lombard Crown Plaza.
Yeah, that's a. Is it technically in Glen Ellen? I don't know.
I think so. The mailing address is. But yeah, they call themselves the Glen Ellen Lombard Crown Plaza.
Yeah, they're
right exactly on the corner.
Glen Ellen and Lombard are basically the same city. So now I'm in trouble with all the people who live in Glen Ellen and Lombard. Thanks, Kay. We'll
thanks,
talk.
Guys, thanks so much.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Mike, you were going to say? Oh.
I'm here. It's an exciting opportunity. The bill we're talking about, we don't want to get too technical and bogged down in boring details of legislation, but the bill we're talking about, it doesn't proscribe or mandate any programs. What it does is remove barriers and legislative obstacles, impediments to the programs. Like there were waste, food scraps are always classified as a waste or as a garbage, and the only people who could pick it up were, you know, waste haulers with transfer station permits and landfill permits designed for disposal. So just as your recycler comes by to pick up your regular recycling, what we call traditional recycling, your newspaper cans and bottles, they don't need to be specially cited or specially permitted like a waste hauler does or a transfer station or a landfill. And that's the main change. Food scraps can now be picked up, or as of January 1st, food scraps will be able to be picked up and treated as a recyclable, compostable thing and not just for disposal, not just for landfill disposal.
And what will people need to do to be able? They'll still need a permit to do this,
yes,
right?
Yeah, there is, you know, and that's going to be discussed. And some of that language is actually still being worked out. I mean, it doesn't kick in until January 1st, so, I mean, Illinois EPA still has another 6 weeks to.
Oh boy!
Yeah. And it's going to be a lot less onerous, a lot less expensive. There's going to be some minimal important protections, you know, certifications of the sites, but it's not going to be a, you know, a hugely expensive, onerous process as it has been in previous years.
For folks who want to right. recycle and compost those kinds of right. materials.
Right. For instance, like, let's say a grocery store, whether it's Whole Foods, Jewel, or Dominick's, something like that. They've wanted people, many of them have wanted people to collect food scraps. They wanted to hire a company, a recycler, so to speak, to come by and collect their food scraps for composting and not just for garbage, not for disposal.
Right.
And that, up until now, that was very difficult. And the legislative impediments that prevented that in the past have been substantially removed or greatly minimized by this new legislation, so that whole avenue is open for, independent entrepreneurial efforts to start. So it's not going to be overnight. It's going to be a learning curve, an implementation curve. It's just like the barriers have been removed, and now we can proceed.
I wonder what's going to happen. You talked about the contribution to the city of Chicago mm-hmm. to this legislation. I wonder what happens now in Chicago in terms of getting food composted. What kind, especially, and again, restaurants and, as you said, supermarkets, they would like that. But I know the average citizen who doesn't compost or doesn't have room to compost would love to have the San Francisco-style green bin where they can throw that in. Where do you see... What do you see happening in the city of Chicago?
It'll be interesting to see. I don't know how long it would take to get that. We do have a woman from the San Francisco Department of Environment coming to speak on Thursday. She's going to be talking about the steps San Francisco took to get from where they were to where they are now. Also, someone from the city of Huron, Ohio. I mean, that's the Midwest. I mean, people look at, you know, San Francisco as the big, unattainable, oh, sure, they do it there.
they do. That's what people say. Well, yeah. San Francisco.
Right. No, but we're having also Huron, Ohio is a lot more Midwest. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot more, people perceive them a lot more like us. You know, like Illinois and Ohio and Indiana and Michigan and Wisconsin are, you know, kind of like...
But is that it? I mean, are there other cities in the Midwest that do the compost recycling?
There may be. Ohio has a favorable legislation, so there are, I believe, I got a map to like 14 sites in Ohio that do the food scrap composting. We're going to have a person who manages one of those sites come and talk. I'll know more after her talk is over. And but I think, you know, Chicago has a lot of positive energy going on recycling. And as you and I both know and share the frustration, it's going to take longer than we hoped, even for traditional recycling.
I know. I mean, that's right. And that's something I've been talking about mm-hmm. for a couple of weeks. And in the last couple of days, talking with DOE people, mm-hmm. They're frustrated, too,
sure.
Because there's no money. They have assured me that the blue cart will continue to be rolled out. The question is, at what speed? When will it be finished? And then when do we get to the next step? Well, and there are several next steps, unfortunately. One of them is the composting, but the other next step is multi-unit recycling in the city of Chicago. So there's still, unfortunately, a long, long way to go.
Right. And I think I believe their expressed intentions are sincere. I think they've moved beyond defending the blue bag.
At least we can do that. That's a good idea.
Because when I first started working for Illinois Recycling Association in 2001, coming out of an outreach director position at Citizens for a Better Environment, where we were actively door-to-door opposing the blue bag mm-hmm. and saying, you know, this has to change, call your alderman. When I first came to my current position, they were in denial. You know, I would tell them my personal experience of speaking to hundreds of Chicago residents, you know, what a disaster the blue bag program was, and they politely either spun it differently or disagree or didn't believe
there them. There are still some people who do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There are still some people in the city who say, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad, and you know, we never gave it a chance to work. Well, we gave it 17 years to try to work.
I think it takes 18, though.
Oh, you're right. What were we thinking?
So I think the recognition that to be the greenest city anywhere needs a better recycling program than that is good. They've moved beyond that. Their intention to implement the blue cart citywide into the sector of the city they serve directly is good. But, you know, obviously the budget interacts with that. And so I think all of this stuff, we're going to have to take a longer view. I mean, I think that we're on the right track. We need to support their efforts and applaud the fact that they're moving forward. And it's just not going to happen as quickly as we want
to. So you prefer the sugar cube rather than the rolled-up newspaper to the head?
Well, I mean, again, all I'm saying is that some people might deserve the rolled-up newspaper. Like when Mayor Daley says that trucks are going down the alley to pick up 1 pound of recycling. Okay, yeah. Maybe that deserves a rolled up newspaper to the head. That's a, you know.
Can I do it?
Sure, if you schedule. Yeah.
Only if you recycle the newspaper afterwards.
Thank you, Heather.
But because that, you know, that kind of points, you know, paints recyclers and recycling in a bad light.
And well, you know what it is. Yeah. You know that's, and I got frustrated with that remark too. when the mayor turns it back and says the reason it's not working is that you're not working, the citizens aren't working hard enough to recycle. Give me a break.
Right. I don't know where that example came from.
What exactly can go into a recycling bin?
Like, okay. Now, since you brought that up, Heather, let's...
Because if we're going to talk recycling, what are the brass tacks of recyclables mm-hmm. that people can put out there so it's more than a pound?
And as a matter of fact, this is the stump the mic part, and there's two of us in the studio, two mics here. And then the microphones, so there's like five.
Yeah, really?
Stump the mics. 773-838-9278. If you've got a question about recycling, and I've wanted to do this for a long time, and we may not have the answers for everything, but give us a call if you're not sure how to recycle something, and we'll give it our best shot. 773-838-WCPT. And I know some of the people at the dinner last night threatened to call in this morning, Mike, but they're probably cowards. They won't do that. Or maybe they will. Okay. I don't know. That's a challenge. See, I just threw down the glove. But if you do have a question about it, do give us a call. Now, Heather, you brought up something that is really important. What goes into basic recycling systems, for instance, in Chicago with the blue card or like me taking it to a drop-off location. Let me ask a quick question about that, Mike, since you cover the whole state with the Illinois Recycling Association. Do most municipalities pick up pretty much the same things, or is it widely vary?
When you go further downstate, glass becomes an issue in some communities.
Now, I thought that was, you know, a fixture in recycling.
Well, it's infinitely recyclable, but when you get out of the Chicago metro area, I mean, many places do recycle glass. I'm not saying they don't at all. I'm saying, but that's one of the variables you find when you move further downstate. You will find more variance in whether or not glass is collected. Also, you will find that many of the programs out of the Chicago metro area still do plastics 1 and 2 as opposed to all plastics but polystyrene, all but 6. So basically the Chicago program is pretty much like all but 6. The Chicago metro program, the most common suburban single stream program, is all but 6.
And that's what I've never understood. Now, I understand there are different kinds of 6, mm-hmm. different kinds of polystyrene. There's the expanded, and then there's the other kinds, the more solid kinds. In the horticultural industry, you can recycle number 6. That's one of their chief recyclable products because so many containers that contain plants, flats, and that's are made of number 6. I can't understand for the life of me why that can't get extended to regular recycling. I don't get that. Is it
right? I guess it's, well, I mean, and what they say is almost everything is recyclable under the optimal circumstances. Like if you have a high volume of clean material, almost anything is recyclable, including polystyrene, including number 6. A percentage of the people who use garden pots or the flat racks for plants is significantly small in the general population, that when you get this material to the MRF, to the material recovery facility, where everything is sorted out into discrete commodities and brokered and marketed, they say it's just not enough to make it worthwhile. And the extra effort it takes to micro-sort down to that 0.1% turns recycling economics around on that commodity.
So that's why the horticultural businesses can recycle it, because it's already separated and they're not dealing with other kinds of... They're dealing, from what I understand, 2, 5, and 6 are in the horticultural industry are the mm-hmm. primary plastics.
Right.
So because they deal specifically with those, they get a lot more number 6. That means that they have in enough quantity so that they can recycle it.
Right. So they're not recycling it through their mixed commodity bin.
Right.
They're recycling it as a already separated commodity, which does have value if you get enough of it.
Yeah. That's Mike Mitchell, the executive director of the Illinois Recycling Association. We're taking your phone calls about recycling, 773-838-9278. Let us go to line one and Matt in Lake Zurich. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well.
Good. What's your question?
Well, I'm actually a new resident to the city, and I'm wondering what to do with my batteries.
To which city? Lake Zurich?
No, to Chicago.
To Chicago. All right.
I'm driving through this morning.
Ah, I see. That's actually
That's a good question. That's,
yeah.
That's an easy one.
it is, because there is a the hazardous waste drop-off in the city of Chicago, which is on North Branch.
And also Walgreens and public libraries.
And Walgreens and public libraries as well. Yeah, it's just amazing. Now, in the Walgreens and public libraries, is that every day? Can they take it every day?
I believe so, yeah. The public library, they have a drop-off. The Walgreens, it's the camera department. You can bring your household batteries and bag to the camera department in most Walgreens. They take them there. And, yeah, like you said, there is the Goose Island facility.
Right. I'm going to that site right now, the Goose Island facility, because they take batteries and other kinds of hazardous waste. And they're not open every day, but they're open 3 days a week now, which is better than a lot of places in the state where they have these drives for hazardous waste maybe twice a year. You know, in the city of Chicago, and I guess some of the collar counties here, there are many more days that where you can recycle that. So batteries, Matt, if you're in the city, you can take it to the Walgreens or the library. Mike, is there some kind of packaging you need to put it in?
No, typically just a plastic bag, you know, any kind of
something that which they will also have to try to figure out how to recycle, right?
Well, they have recycling and for those too now, and typically in Walgreens or similar stores, CVS like that, pharmacies and grocery stores in Chicago should have recycling bins for film plastic.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. Does that help, Matt? Wait, hold on one more. Let me find the, where is the, here it is. If you go to the city of Chicago, .org, and you go to the Department of the Environment, so it's just cityofchicago.org/environment, and then on the right side you'll see a link to the Household Chemicals and Computer Recycling Facility, which I am clicking on right now, and I hope it comes up because then I can give you the hours on that. That's on it's in Goose Island. North Branch is the name of the street. All right, I'll get, wait a second, here it is. Come on up for me. Come on, come to Papa. That is open 3 days a week, I believe Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And here we are. Here's the facility hours. Yes, Tuesday 7 to 12 noon. Thursday is 2 to 7. So basically, it's mornings on Tuesday, afternoons on Thursday, and then 8 to 3 on Saturday. The first Saturday of every month, 8 to 3. That's that. But if it's just batteries, yeah, you can take them to the other places. So thanks for calling. I appreciate it, Matt.
Absolutely. Very helpful. Thank you, gentlemen.
No problem. The number again is 773-838-9278. Mike Mitchell from the Illinois Recycling Association is here. I was going to talk about some other things at we'll take another question because this will all come up as these people call in. So let us go to Jan in Edgewater. You're on the Mike Novak Show, Jan.
Hi, good morning, Mike and Mike. I'm so glad I just dozed awake and heard you guys, and I'm so happy because I'm a real OCD recycler, and I scrub everything clean, and actually I don't trust my building to recycle it properly. So,
all right, but wait a second. Let me ask you about that. Are you in a multi-unit building?
Yes, I'm in a condo. So we do have our own private company that comes.
Right, and technically, the the city of Chicago has an ordinance on the books, the Berkhansen ordinance, which really, as they say, is observed more in the what's the Shakespeare? More in the observance, more in the breach than the observance,
right.
Is followed. But I'm wondering why you don't trust them in terms of recycling. That's my question.
Okay, here's two things. Well, one, my building didn't tell us when they changed the program, and we used to just put it in a blue bin, and they came and picked it up on a separate day, and then they changed it to where they pick it up, same company picks it up, and we didn't know we were supposed to be putting it in a different bin. And so for I don't know how many months I was doing my usual scrubbing all the plastic and metal containers, and I found out I didn't know about the other bin. Nobody did, and it all just went into trash, so I got frustrated, and I started taking it directly to a recycling place in the 4700 block of North Sheridan. But it's a small facility, and one thing is they don't take any plastic. So
interesting.
So I got lots of plastic. I have to trust the building dumpster for that, the big blue thing.
Well, there are drop-off locations all over the city of Chicago that the city has set up.
Good. That was my next question.
Like 30.
There's 30 of them.
I don't even have a car. I take this, take it on the bus. I take a cab, whatever, because I just look at all the stuff that accumulates, papers, magazines, it's pitiful what gets tossed into the regular trash. So how can I get a list of all those places? Do I have to go on computer, or can I call?
It's on the Chicago, the City of Chicago website, the list of all their drop-offs.
Okay.
There. I would also say and encourage you to work with your property manager and your condo association, however it's organized there. Recycling on one hand is so simple. On the other hand, and we can make it so difficult. Clear instructions, well-posted signs.
Right.
That's more than half the battle. If you and your fellow residents in your condo association who, obviously care enough to make sure your privately contracted hauler includes recycling, help your building get the signs clear, help you and your fellow residents to know what goes where, and maximize that. Recycling is more worth it for the hauler if he comes every week and finds a full bin.
Yes, my bin is full, so enough people do it, and they do only pick up once a week, which actually sometimes the bin can't even close flat because it's so packed with stuff. So I would maybe talk with them about having twice a week pickup. I don't know if that's unusual to...
Well, the goal, of course, is to get the recycling to be the primary pickup. And that, even if we get composted materials recycled, we're going to get to the point where there's very little garbage as such. Right. And I find in my household... My recycling versus my garbage is probably, I don't know, a 10-to-1 ratio, something
like
that.
Oh, mine too. Yeah, I have these little bitty, I use the little bitty bags for real garbage, and everything else is just huge amounts of stuff that can be recycled. And also, one other question. When you put things in there, I know I've heard too now you shouldn't put them in big plastic bags because, like, metal and plastic, you can just dump it into the big dumpster because the plastic bags you put it in don't degrade. So
you don't need to sort them within the bin.
No
technology now. Actually, if you go to our website, IllinoisRecycles.org,
okay.
We have a series of 3-minute videos we call virtual tours. You could see a video, a 3-minute video of a recycling facility, and you see exactly how it's both human labor and mechanized. There are magnets and air jets and trommels and different screens that it all gets separated, it's sorted out. to.
Because I wondered about that. I thought, gee, does this really work? You know, am I doing all this for nothing? Or does this stuff just end up in the garbage dump anyway? Like we had heard about the blue bag thing, you know, that it.
Well, I'll tell you something, Jan. What's interesting is that a lot of people like there are two issues here. One, there are a lot of people like you are concerned that they're. Recycling, quote unquote, recycling ends up in a landfill, and mm-hmm. I suspect to some degree, and you probably agree, Mike, that sometimes it does.
Not the norm, but we can't say it never happens.
Okay. Right, all right. But the other thing that people are confused about is how they can put all this different recycling in one bin and it gets separated. And believe me, it does. They have very efficient scientific ways of doing this now. The technology has really advanced in the last 10 years, hasn't it, Mike?
Oh, sure. Well, like I said, it's a combination of different size screens that are designed to have certain materials fall into the bin below and other materials continue on the conveyor belt. Uh-huh. There are magnets and eddy currents, like so the steel cans will get caught in the magnet. The aluminum cans will be repelled by the eddy current and shot off to a different bin. Yeah. There are optical sorters where an air jet might knock off all the PET that goes by. It's very, very sophisticated, and there is some manual labor there at the very front end, pulling stuff off the line that doesn't need to be there. Sometimes will people, you know, typically if you see a line of workers at a recycling facility, everyone has a job. Everyone's looking for one specific commodity.
Okay.
And it works quite well. Not 100%, but a good recycling facility will have a residue rate in the single digits.
And if you're not, if you're a little... concerned about your recycling, obviously you should talk to the building manager and have them talk to the waste hauler and make sure it's being done. But it probably is. It's just a matter of getting everybody to put the right materials in there and in the right bins. Jan, I got to go. Great. I got some other questions, but thank you for calling.
Thank you guys for all your help.
All right. No problem.
Bye-bye.
773-838-WCPT. Deb in Chicago is next. I need to do this first and tell you that, well, it's time to do your holiday to-do list. Thanksgiving's a week from Thursday, which means the frenzied days of gift shopping and holiday parties are not far behind. Doesn't that just sound wonderful? No, I know. People going, no, that doesn't sound wonderful. But, you know, it's a time for families to get together. And Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center can help you get through these times, these hectic times, with great gifts, plus home and party decor. You've doubtless been disappointed before by discount store or grocery store poinsettias, so this year send a real florist-quality poinsettia from Sid's. They deliver throughout the entire Chicagoland area. And this week, during their Christmas open house, you'll save 25 to 60% off their entire stock of Christmas decor to make this holiday season extra special. SIDS has thousands of traditional Christmas ornaments and trims displayed on dozens of theme trees, plus the area's largest selection of lifelike artificial trees in over 100 styles. And that's my next question to you, Mike, so hang on to that, and that's recycling Christmas trees. Not the real ones, because I know how to do that, but maybe the artificial ones. You'll save on the nativity sets, tablecloths, and lifelike wreaths, garlands, and arrangements, and so much more. In addition, special free demonstrations are scheduled throughout the day at both of their stores. Visit SIDSonline.com for all the details and to download the coupons for a free holiday-themed canvas tote and $10 off your purchase. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Oh, yeah. You hit the button, and sometimes it goes. And sometimes it just takes its sweet old time. And then sometimes it just shuts off again. What's going on?
It's the CPT gremlin.
Yeah, is it? Let's do that again.
I've named him Charlie.
Let's see if it goes through this time. Charlie?
Charlie the CPT gremlin.
Anybody, and named after anybody in particular?
No, I just thought it was fitting. He's like a, maybe I should call him Puck.
No, Charlie works for me. This is the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Mike Mitchell is here from the Illinois Recycling Association. I keep saying Chicago because I happen to be president of the Chicago Recycling Association. We had a caller who said about the batteries at Walgreens and Library, they have towers to drop batteries. So that means outdoors. Yeah, so you don't...
It's either outside or in the camera department, but you can just... It's like a long tower, and you can just drop them in and go.
Yeah, so don't even have to worry about the bags. But, the one thing that was mentioned by our previous caller was putting plastic into the plastic bag. What I see in the drop-off bins in Chicago is and there's an irony here, people put their recyclables in blue bags and then throw them into the drop-off dumpsters. Now, what kind of problems does that cause, Mike?
I don't think it's a major problem. I don't think it doesn't cause anything not to get recycled. It creates a little more work at the sorting center to break them open. Some of that might be saved and recycled as film, and some of it just might go out with the garbage at the sorting center. You know, so it may, what's in the bags will almost definitely get recycled. The bags themselves, depending on the particular MRF they're sorted at, they might be saved for, collected with a load for film, film plastics, or it might be swept away and not recycled.
Yeah, and we did talk about how you can take some of this the film plastic can be recycled, but again, it's like everything. You need enough quantity to make this practical.
Right. And in the mechanized sorting system of a high-tech MRF, film plastic doesn't behave well. It gets caught in the air and flips and flops around, and it just doesn't work well in the machinery. So most likely the people at the front of the line will be tearing that stuff out, throwing it most likely in the garbage. It is recyclable. Back when the blue bag MRFs were operating, a lot of the blue bags were baled and recycled. I've seen big bale of blue bags that were.
What about the grocery stores where you take your film plastic? Obviously, they want you to return just the plastic bags that they create. But I know everybody puts every kind of film plastic there. Does that create a problem?
No. It's everything. Any kind of dry cleaning bag, newspaper sleeve, any type of plastic bag from any retail outlet whatsoever, it's all the same. They can't just get their own brands.
Just for film plastic, does that also include, would that be the same plastic that, you have wrapped in a DVD or packaging plastics?
That's a really good point. Or
can you include that with grocery bag plastic recycling?
Good question. I actually haven't encountered that. I would think so, but I'm not 100% sure. Other plastics you can put in there are things like let's say you buy a 6 or an 8 pack of toilet paper, or the plastic wrap of a hand towels, things like that.
That's what I was wondering too. Yeah,
right, so that kind of stuff can go in there. The plastic from your carrots.
But the problem is, where else other than a grocery store? Now, I know the city of Chicago passed an ordinance last year that I think is scheduled to go into effect at the beginning of this coming year, 2010, or sooner. Probably the beginning of this coming year. I got to go look at the ordinance again. Have you heard anything about this and whether the implementation has actually started on this?
No, not really. I mean, we were probably both at the same meetings on the advisory committees and stuff like that. But no, I haven't. I have be good to follow up on that. My understanding is that I think the first part of it is already out there. I mean, I think that the collection bins are supposed to be out by now.
You know what? And that would make a good story. To go out and firsthand look and see, because the complaint I had with it is that it kind of went after the mom and pop stores, the smaller outlets, and not the larger ones, which I thought was a problem.
Yeah, it excluded the non-grocery, non-pharmacy. Like, so if you go somewhere that primarily sells clothing or primarily sells electronics, they were exempted, and the bill was focused on, the legislation was focused on grocery stores and pharmacies
for better stores were already doing it, so was the point there? Yeah. Let's go back to the phones, and Deb is in Chicago. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Hi, Deb.
Hey, I'm really wondering what to do with these compact fluorescent bulbs.
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they do need special attention and special care. Mike?
Right, yes. There are a number of collection retail outlets that take them back. I believe a place like Home Depot has a collection bin for them.
Did we lose her? Are you there, Deb? Okay, go ahead.
And the Goose Island facility would take them.
Yeah.
Right. There's a number of places now that collect those compact fluorescent bulbs. Usually, retail outlets like a home supply place that sell them. They do have to be.
Break them because they release mercury.
Right, and they are recyclable, so it's not like your regular incandescents, which we've been told are not recyclable, and you just throw them away.
Well, what is the truth on that? Because that's what I've been told, and
you can't recycle a regular light bulb.
Yeah, typically not. It's just the thin glass filament and the thin glass cover, and then the filament and the metal, it just doesn't work. I mean, it probably, again, anything is recyclable under the right conditions, but the way we collect recycling,
part of what's so frustrating for the average person is they're told that you can't recycle an incandescent light bulb. What? What do you mean I can't recycle an incandescent? It just seems like, well, there's glass in it, there's plastic, or not plastic, but metal. You think the metal can be recycled, the glass can be recycled. What's stopping us from recycling? And as you said, it's the specific conditions of how they're brought together in that product.
Right. If you're doing a separation system like at a modern MRF or material recovery facility, that little flimsy glass shatters. And that's not recoverable the same way a jar or a bottle is. It's just, it's just tiny particles. Probably what would be recycled would be the metal end of it, the part of the bulb you actually screw in.
That's what I would think, yeah.
Right. That would be probably caught by the magnet, probably caught by a steel magnet.
And speaking of steel magnets, we just had a phone call, and the woman asked, and she couldn't hang on, obviously, can you recycle a toaster? Now, there's metal for you.
Sure. I mean, most of that... Many electronics recyclers will take anything with a plug.
So, and when you say electronics recyclers, who are you talking about? Where do people find an electronics recycler?
The Goose Island facility we've mentioned numerous times is also a computer recycler.
Although I did see, and I don't know if it's still true, at one point they stopped taking televisions. Is that still the case? I'm going to go back to the...
I've not confirmed that lately.
Yeah, let me go back to the site because I've got a television that I didn't upgrade to. Go ahead, Heather.
In regards to small appliances, mm-hmm. I know I used to just scrap them. We'd literally take a hammer to them and rip them apart and take all the metal pieces and put them in a scrap metal bin. And anything that wasn't, traditional recycling that we could take away in the bin, we'd just toss in the trash. But there's a better way to go about it.
Right. I mean, most if there's a collection event, I know even with this permanent facility, sometimes like the city will hold a special drive around, Earth Week, whatever. I know there's been some collections at like DeVry or different places with big parking lots. And it's very common to do that as well in the suburban communities, the collar counties, Northern Cook County, Lake County, DuPage County, et cetera, Will County. They will have these recycling drop-off facilities for electronics, for computers, for televisions. And typically, they take anything with anything with the plug.
So a microwave, a toaster.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What about when are recyclable materials considered contaminated? Because Mike told me this like 2 weeks ago. I had a pizza box that had grease on it, and I threw it in the recycling bin, and he said, no, it's contaminated.
Yeah, that's a gray area, and that's part of where it's because obviously, corrugated, clean corrugated is recyclable. So if for any reason you get your pizza box delivered and it didn't get all greasy and gooey, sure, it's cardboard. It's recyclable. On the other hand, a lot of times the instruction booklets you get from your waste hauler will say no pizza boxes because they're worried that there's going to be, the grease and the oils and the sauce, which will degrade the material, as it's processed. So, again, that's something where people are. It's fair to say that we're can't always give as clear an answer as we want to be. Yeah, sure, it's recyclable.
Well, yeah, yeah. And there we are, which brings us to the sort of the nuts and bolts of recycling is that not everything is clear cut.
Right.
And sometimes you have to work at it. And sometimes you can do it sometimes and not another. People say, well, can I recycle a pizza box? I say, yeah, if you bought a frozen pizza and it was encased in plastic, mm-hmm. that box is perfectly recyclable. Mm-hmm. But if you had it delivered...
See, that's tragic because it's like thick, good cardboard.
Right.
It's good cardboard because I ordered good pizza and... But, yeah, sadly, the drivers aren't all that great, and they usually slide around in the box. So
but my program lists it. In other words, in my booklet, it lists pizza boxes as a yes to recycle.
They certainly, I would think, could be composted. You know,
could you burn one? Like, would that be? You'd have the greasy part.
Burning is its own.
That would not be advised. I would say recycling or composting. But when going back to the food scrap discussion, especially from grocery stores and restaurants, and even from individual homes, when it gets to that X years down the road, that type of soggy cardboard, paper material, food packaging material that is, soggy from the food, that will all be compostable. That's compostable, too. So that would be. That pizza box in question may go in your compost bin, where there's no question about it. That kind of thing.
That's Mike Mitchell, who's the executive director of the Illinois Recycling Association. And, of course, the website is illinoisrecycles.com. And it's
org.
Org. I'm sorry. Wow. Did I put that? Whatever it is, it's on my website because it links to it. It's .org.
Right.
So I must have gotten it right because it's linking to it. Why did I say that? Yeah, most of these organizations, it's like ours, is .org. Let me do something real quick, and then I want to talk about where we're headed with the various. And I'm looking. Okay, here we are. Looking at the. We talked about the dropping the hazardous waste. In Chicago, it says the facility does not accept business/commercial sector waste, explosives, fireworks, latex paint, or working televisions. So should I break my television so I can take it in there? That's what. And I'm wondering why they wouldn't accept working televisions. It seems they take pretty much everything else. Latex paint is an interesting one too. What do you do with your latex paint?
Paint the inside of your garage door, the upstairs of your attic.
So you're stuck with latex paint. That's weird. I mean, why are we creating stuff that you can't ever get rid of?
The latex paint, the Illinois EPA has determined that the latex paint is not toxic enough to warrant the special processing cost of collection. So not that they won't take it, but they don't want it, because, the extra cost that goes into collecting household hazardous waste separately, the toxic threat posed by latex paint does not justify the extra cost. And they just say, reuse it. Worst case scenario, let it dry, and then I don't want to say throw it away, but that's what they say. You could let it dry.
All right. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Now is the time to start thinking about winter pruning for your trees. When the leaves have dropped in the fall, it is easier for your arborist to see the structure and architecture of your trees. Also, when summer annuals have been removed, there's less risk of disrupting your landscape when working on large trees. In regions where the soil freezes, that's us, they can get equipment in closer, which increases safety and reduces your costs. Winter pruning can also reduce the risk of introducing some serious diseases that are active and spread easily during the growing season of spring and summer. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees, my good buddies, they've been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. Go online, thecareoftrees.com, or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. And, let's not forget, Kathleen just sent me a reminder. If you go to MikeNovak.net and you go to Green Tips, we have the information on pizza boxes on there. If you forget and you can't tell, that would be a great place to go. I put something online here, Mike, which you and I had talked about before, and I noticed that it's kind of... interesting that now this is happening, and boy, I can't find it, but there was an article this week about DART setting up a polystyrene recycling in Aurora.
Yes, it's in North Aurora. It's a new facility. They have a drop-off for foam polystyrene, the stuff you get in your VCRs and TVs, that also doesn't work on a curbside collection or an alley collection bin, but they have a new facility there. It's a facility that's been there, but they have expanded their recycling program there. And if you can get your foam expanded polystyrene to their facility in North Aurora, you can recycle it there.
And the problem I have with that is that we need more. If we're going to do that, I mean, it's not even worth shipping your stuff to polystyrene to Aurora unless you get tons of it.
Right. I mean, there's the irony that you fight traffic in your car with a trunk full of polystyrene, and then you drive back home, and where is the carbon footprint environmental balance in that?
Right. Yeah. Mike Mitchell, thank you so much for coming down to the show and being here on Self-Help Sunday and the Mike Novak Show. Go to IllinoisRecycles.org. And you'll find the videotapes on how to do stuff, clips there. You can see it. Check out their website. Great stuff. And congratulations. Today is America Recycles Day. Let's all go out, do some good for the environment. Next week, the Frozen Robins are on the show. Be afraid. Be very afraid. I hope you tune in next Sunday at 8.